Hey, Ed Fallon with you here, folks, and I'd like to welcome to the program Mark Klipsham, architect, occasional radio DJ, and can I call you a philosopher?
Sure, and active builder for, well, I actually started building clubhouses when I was about six.
Clubhouses. Yeah.
Well, that's where I learned about leaky roofs.
So, hey, what?
50 years.
We're going to talk about a bunch of things, but I want to start with your architectural take on the demolition of the East Wing of the White House and the construction of the White House Ballroom. I'm sure that you've been vying for the contract to build that, right?
Oh, I did rapidly, sure. Nothing like good clients to work with.
Right, Trump would never backstab a customer.
No.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, what do you think? The cost has been an issue for sure.
Well, my job is to be a critical thinker and crunch numbers. And possibly the simplest math I could come up with was 300 million. It started out as 200 million. It went to 300 million. Might get us a 100% overrun, 50% overrun to begin with, increase. 90,000 square feet. Okay, I'm a little calculator here. $3,333 a square foot. So if I were to build a 1,000 square foot home like this, it would go on the market for $3.3 million. In comparison, by the way, the Fed building that Trump gives Powell grief over, ancient building, renovations, incredibly expensive, federal, D.C., the whole bit, $1,900 a square foot.
$1,900. Okay.
Yeah, after the overrun. This is, marble and limestone and lead paint removal and all that kind of stuff.
Who's building this thing anyhow? Do we know?
The White House, the ballroom?
Yeah, I mean, who are the contractors involved in getting rich off this overpriced?
No, that's not who's getting rich. This is my opinion.
Okay.
Having been in the biz for a while. Remember, this is not government money. This is private money.
Well,
built on public land. There's a lot here. That means there's no oversight. There's no accountability. The GOA is not government of Office of Accountability. Is not. Nobody's paying attention to this except Trump and the people with the money, right?
Right.
So, in that, you could literally build the Taj Mahal for less than this per square foot, or La Sagrada Familia by Antonio Gaudi in Barcelona. They figured that at around $400 to $450 million for the whole cathedral. Rebuilding, not Ramshans, what burned ancient cathedral. That is much less per square foot. It just boggles my mind. So as an architect, I would say, wow, client, either somebody's taking you for a ride here or something. Something's going on.
Yeah.
I would have to dig into it, but of course, I'm not allowed to do that.
Well, the fact that it's being built with private donors is no comfort at all. I mean, those donors are getting some great value from that connection to Trump,
in that it would cost a whole lot less to build than that. Where does the frosting go? The whipped cream, so to speak. Once again, there's nobody keeping track, so I have a feeling I know where it will end up.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And the other side of this question is, though, what did it cost to demolish the East Wing? Any idea?
Demolitions, and especially when you're the president in Washington, D.C., if it was a bona fide project in Des Moines or Kansas City or wherever, you would have regulators there, you'd have lead abatement, you'd have, well, I goodness gracious, look at all the materials that are in there. Beautiful windows, incredible high quality materials. I would hope they would be recycling some of it. It looks like it was just track hose and dumpsters, so
yeah,
all that
crazy
history, a usable product. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we have a president who believes in recycling.
Yeah, I kind of got that too. Yeah.
So
as the budget crunching numbers, it seems to follow through as a pattern through all the proposals and everything I hear about.
Yeah. Hey, so I want to switch gears here. I know we're affordability is a big buzzword these days. You hear it from Trump. Trump, what did he say? That he just discovered a new word. I don't know if affordability was a new word for him, but for those of us who live basically paycheck to paycheck, affordability has been a word in our vernacular for a long time. But it's a buzzword. It may be a campaign theme. I know one specific thing that comes to, and I know you're concerned about too, is air travel. We could talk about what happened with air travel and during the shutdown, but a bigger issue is, to me, how air travel has been so heavily subsidized that it is now more affordable than taking a train, taking a bus even, and oftentimes driving, even long distance. And now they're talking about another way to make air travel more affordable, and at the same time throwing out the sustainability card by switching to environmentally friendly jet fuel alternatives to what they currently burn. And one of those is rendered animal fat. One of your favorite subjects, I know, is rendered animal fat.
They all seem to be a thin covering on reality. I've heard of algae being used to make in Iowa. I wanted to invest in it. That actually sounded reasonable, but it's private, of course. Types of biofuels, soy, ethanol, that kind of stuff. Sure, those are all heavily subsidized, as far as I'm concerned, and they don't stand on their own. And by the way, so there it is on the face, rendered animal fat. Okay, it comes from animals for one thing. So basically I'm going to connect some dots here. You're grinding up living beings to make jet fuel. Animal production, CAFOs, all that kind of stuff. Huge impact on the environment. And by the way, okay, so maybe we have this miracle of actual sustainable jet fuel. Airports are ridiculous energy monsters.
Just the airport itself, you mean?
Oh, everything about them.
Yeah.
Animal production, I heard somewhere between 15 and 20% of carbon emissions in the world are from that. Their argument against parts of it were it's not sustainable if the cattle are raised on rainforest lands that have been deforested. I like, oh,
well, that's
wait
a
minute.
That's
your issue.
Yeah. That's a really good point. There was a recent story from, I think, just a couple months ago in Reuters about a Texas refinery that is beginning to supply so-called, quote, green fuel to, U.S. airline companies. And it's been getting the animal fat that it used to make that fuel from cattle raised on land in the Amazon that has been illegally cleared, cleared forests. And
so that was the riff. You go like, wait a minute, even in the best scenario, we're in Iowa, right? I don't know if you've heard of some Iowa water quality problems.
Oh, yeah.
it's like there's the cattle and there's the fat, and then there's the chain, the spider web of everything that comes with it. So the sustainable jet fuel is partially responsible for 20,000 square mile dead zone in the Gulf.
Yeah.
The raping of the soil in Iowa, the water quality, nitrates, cancer levels. You know, come on, it's sustainable. No, not by, and it's really using animal fat. That's to me, that's like on a chicken farm, you're raising eggs, you take all the male chickens, you put them in a hopper, and you grind them up and get rid of them. That's the level of sustainability and empathy and thought we're talking about.
We have a shared dislike of industrial scale, factory farming. I think that's...
It's fallout, too. It's not just that. Once again, it's all connected to a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right. But, to me, there are ways of sustainably raising animals that are actually good for the environment. Deforesting the Amazon, cutting down the Amazon forest, rainforest, and raising cattle there is not one of them.
By the way, soybeans, too.
Now
China's going to buy it from the new market. Chopped up more rainforest.
Brazil and Argentina, yeah.
is we have mountains of them here, but never mind why we can't get from point A to point B. That would get us back where we started.
Let me ask you this, Mark. I mean, I'm a big fan of train travel. It's I mean, in Europe, it's just great to be able to travel from, you know, one end of France, for example, to the other, and hardly any time at all, you know, railing along at 200 miles an hour. But to get the U.S. rail system to a comparable level is what we see in Europe, Japan, and even more so China. It's estimated that it would cost up to $3 trillion. And that's it. That is a lot of money. I will point out that it's only three times as much as Elon Musk is now planning to make at Tesla. You know, but, you know, it's not a matter it's very doable. We could have high-speed rail travel, and you could go from New York to Washington, New York to Los Angeles in what, just a matter of a couple of days,
or less. Can I do this spider web thing again, though?
Go ahead.
In Europe, for example, my daughter did a study abroad in Valencia, so we fly over there to Madrid. Yeah, trip. Transit, rail, that kind of stuff. Got off. We walked to the Airbnb with our suitcases. You're not going to do that here. You're going to get off the train in LA. You're going to need to do a cab, an Uber, every single time you do everything, because the cities are laid out for non-sustainable vehicles. Once again, okay, now we got EVs. Back to the spider web thing. Yeah, well, those EVs are on a ridiculously carbon-heavy infrastructure, concrete, asphalt, power lines, traffic lights, everything. Everything about it is non-sustainable. You take one aspect of it and you improve it a little bit. By the way, that electricity doesn't come from ferries, and it comes from energy sources that are also using carbon energy, blah, 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 blah. It's you're looking at the tip of an iceberg, and there's not going to be icebergs for long.
Well, that's a different topic. Yeah. So let me as an architect, and maybe this is beyond your purview, but do you see the estimated cost of between $1 and $3 trillion as a reasonable estimate to build a complete, you know, passenger rail system, a high speed rail system in the U.S.?
Yeah, so that's only part of the equation. Weakest link and all that. The city near me, I'm not going to mention it, had a sustainability study done. The consultants for $150,000 told them if they spent $3.3 billion, they could have a sustainable city, which seemed a little ironic to me. You got to consume to be sustainable. The one word that was not mentioned in the entire report was sprawl. Not only would that not cost the city money, that is their single biggest expense is transportation and transportation-related costs. So eliminating sprawl makes mass transit far more affordable, far more cost-effective,
right. And
it makes things like high-speed rail work, because when I get somewhere, I can walk to my hotel. I can take my suitcase on wheels or whatever.
Yeah.
The whole city is set up for that. Here you get here and you're kind of dumped out into, now you get to deal with this. Well, guess what? Americans don't do that. They want a car. I can get my car. I can go there. I can park in the parking lot of the hotel.
And we want to fly, and we want to fly when we want to fly, and we want to get there as fast as possible. You know, yeah. I mean, I think it's important to recognize too that I think the main obstacles to high speed rail in the U.S. are, you know, car, and actually this is from Wikipedia, car dependency induced by the highway lobby. Yeah, that kind of sums it up. But beyond that, people want to get there now, and they want to get there fast.
I'm going to call it conspiracy for lack of, it's really a concerted effort. It's kind of corporatism. The tire people, the auto people, the oil and gas people came in. They bought up the transit lines. They used to have them in Kansas City. They used to have them a whole bunch of places.
Right. Yep.
They bought them up and they tore them out for their market share, cornering the market. Now, you don't have this other option now. You are going to drive. You're going to use tires. You're going to use gas. You're going to buy cars.
Or you're going to fly.
The economy, yeah. But horrible for the cities. They're the ones basically subsidizing all that profit.
Yeah, Mark, I think, again, the bottom line for me is that Americans want it all, and they want it now. And with the lobby, the highway lobby in place, it's a hard road, a hard trail to travel to see us getting to high-speed rail, but I think it's doable. Well, Mark, hey, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it. Mark Klipsham, folks.